9546 of EC is. It has come in obviously 1995. It regulates the processing of personal data within the European Union, and it's designed to protect the privacy of all personal data collected for or about citizens of the European Union, especially as it relates to processing, using or exchanging such data. All members of the European Union, EU, are signatories of the European Convention on Human Rights, and Article 8 of ECHR provides the right to respect of one's private and family life, his home and his correspondence. Any entity, whether government agency, businesses or other organization, handling personal information about living people must comply with its obligation under this directive. What does personal data include? That's very critical, because otherwise it will lead to a lot of complication. So personal data includes data concerning a living person who can be identified by that data, or that can be identified when that data is used in combination with other data likely to be held or acquired in the future. The information doesn't have to be confidential. That's the key in European Union directive. The information doesn't have to be confidential. That means you cannot share any personal data with any other party. Any company or professional that needs to store personal data from its clients in order to perform business activity is classified as data controller. So they have named someone who will, in its normal course of business, get access to customers' personal data as a data controller. Responsible for the availability, integrity and security of that data under these rules could include regulatory authorities, financial authorities, service providers, etc. And EU directive also prohibits transfer of personal data to non-European Union countries that do not meet the European Union adequacy standards for privacy protection. That means you cannot transfer data of European Union outside the European Union or to a non-European Union countries that do not meet the EU directives of adequacy standards for privacy protection. The Data Protection Act of 1998, DPA, this is passed by UK Parliament to control the way information is handled and gave legal rights to people who have the information stored about them. It was enacted to bring UK law into line with European Union Data Protection Directive of 1995 and defined the law on processing of data on identifiable living persons. The US Department of Commerce, in consultation with European Commission, developed a safe harbor framework. A safe harbor is a provision of statute or a regulation that specifies that certain conduct will be deemed not to violate any given rule, and the way for US organization to avoid privacy compliance issue in their business dealing with European Union member states. So a safe harbor framework was created by US Department of Commerce in consultation with European Commission framework for handling of this data. Highlights of the directive are: so members must implement an appropriate technical and organizational measures to protect personal data against accidental or unlawful destruction or accidental loss, alteration, unauthorized disclosures or access. Sending personal information from a member state to a non-member country is legal only with the consent of those person whose data is sent. So it is important to have a consent of the person whose data is sent to a non-European countries from a European country. But there is still a provision that the data may only be sent to countries with similar laws protecting personal information. So even if the citizen of European Union has given confirmation that his data can be shared to any non-European country, but it can only be given to those countries that have similar laws protecting personal information. Individuals have the right to give their consent for use and storage of personal information, and they should be able to revoke consent at any time. Very important, the consent is not for a lifetime, but it can be revoked whenever they wish to. Penalties for violating member states' directive implementations include fines and criminal liability for business owners or executives, data controllers, and employees who report to them. So anyone who's handling data of persons of European Union and employees who report to them are equally liable under this directive. And these act may not apply to domestic use. The European directive initially had 7 principles for protection of personal data, falling into 3 categories. 1. Transparency. The individual has the right to be informed when his personal data is being processed under the following circumstances. A. When the individual has given his consent. B. When the process is necessary for the performance of or entering into a contract. And C. When the processing is necessary for compliance with a legal obligation. So the individual has the right to know when his personal data is being shared under these 3 conditions. Other conditions: when the processing is necessary in order to protect vital interest of the individual, processing is necessary for the performance of the task carried out in public interest or in the exercise of official authority vested in the controller or in a third party to whom the data is disclosed, processing is necessary for the performance of the legitimate interest pursued by the controller or by third party or parties to whom the data is disclosed. So if the data controller or the third party needs the personal information to performance of the legitimate interest of the person, then this disclosure is allowed. Second, it has to be for legitimate purpose. Personal data can only be processed for specified, explicit and legitimate purpose and may not be processed further in a way incompatible with these purposes. That means the data is shared, it is used, processed, and why it is processed must be specified explicitly and only for legitimate purpose and not to be processed further. Proportionality: personal data may be processed only in so far as it is adequate, relevant and not excessive in relation to the purpose for which they are controlled and further processed. That means if you need only name and email ID, then only those 2 fields must be given outside and other fields should not be shared. If you need date of birth, then only date of birth should be given and no other information should be shared. The 8th principle added later was designed to protect personal data being sent to countries with inadequate data protection regimes. So the 8 principles were added later to the European Union Directive of 1995. Of course, it has a data protection act as also some growing social media concerns. It is part of cloud computing challenges, and violations to data protection regulations can impact business adversely. So for example, in cloud, if your data center is in Europe but the backup is outside the Europe, and if backup is taking place, would it constitute that the personal data has traveled outside the European Union? Yes, it will constitute. What if the backup data center was somewhere in Africa and which does not, and in a country which does not have adequate personal legislation related to personal data, then would it breach the European directive? Yes, it will breach. So when corporates or business houses or data managers in European Union share information or tie up with cloud storage, they have to be careful on how they do it. And the data should not come out into those countries which have inadequate personal data protection acts. Data encryption, which has become very important now, is a process of encoding information in a manner that only authorized parties can read it. Algorithm turns data into unreadable format, text decoding with a secret decryption key. So how does this work? So you have a data and you have a key. This key is given to the other party beforehand. You use the key and use the key's algorithm to change the data into unreadable format or meaningless format. The data travels over the network and reaches the other party, who has the key to decrypt it and make it back into readable format. So data encryption works that way, and that is required for any data that needs to flow over the public networks. Article 21, which is right to life and personal liberty of the Constitution of India, is part of the data, personal data protection. Data privacy and data protection concepts were introduced in the Information Technology Act, 2000 Act, through Section 43A and Section 72A. Section 43A says, and it deals primarily with compensation for negligence in implementing and maintaining reasonable security practice and procedures in relationship to sensitive personal data or information, SPDI. So for that to work, you have to first identify from your data set which is the data which is sensitive personal data or information about the other party which you are holding. And once you have identified that, you must have reasonable security practice and procedures in place in relation to how this data will be stored, managed, transferred, whether encrypted, decrypted. Section 43A deals that if you don't have such process, then what are the kind of compensation once the negligence is identified. Section 72A primarily deals with personal information and provides punishment for disclosure of this information in breach of lawful contract or without the information provider's consent. So if this personal information is leaked out, what is the punishment for disclosures? And SPDI includes passwords, financial information, physical, physiological and mental health condition, sexual orientation, medical records and history of biometric information. Also, this is what is there in the Act. You can also define some additional data as SPDI and ensure that you have due diligent process of control around it. FISMA and NIST standards. So FISMA is Federal Information Security Management Act and was passed as Title III of the E-Governance Act in 2002. Information security and importance to US economic and national security is the foundation of this act. And the background of the act is increased internet usage, advances in technology, internet-based government services, which is e-governance, and compliance related to information management. So with the advent of e-governance, especially in US, and more internet usage, they passed this Information Security Management Act. And of course, information security is very important. At the government level, it becomes more important because it covers the entire. So the stated purpose of FISMA is to provide effective leadership of federal government's effort to develop and promote electronic government services and processes by establishing an administrator of a new office of electronic government within the Office of Management and Budget. So under the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, they created a new office for electronic government. All federal agencies are required to comply with the FISMA guidelines for IT system security. So US government agencies should implement and document programs to protect the confidentiality, integrity and availability of IT systems. Federal agencies are annually graded for their FISMA compliance, which are made public. A high grade indicates secure system and assures the public on the security of their information, while a low grade indicates vulnerability to cyber attacks. FISMA requires federal agencies to designate a chief information officer and authorize him, one, for compliance, two, implement an information security program, three, report on adequate and effectiveness of its information security policies, procedures and practice, four, participate in annual independent evaluations of the information security program and practices, and six, develop and maintain an inventory of the agency's major information systems. So for this purpose, a role of National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is NIST, they set up the standards and that helps in FISMA compliance. So NIST bears the formal responsibility for providing guidelines and standards in information security to the agencies of the federal government to follow, which will help them to implement FISMA and manage cost-effective programs to protect their information and information systems. Federal Information Processing Standards, or FIPS, are standardization for use in computer systems by all non-military government agencies and government contractors, that is ANSI, IEEE, ISO. NIST has created a set of standards and guides which work as a risk management framework for agencies to manage organizational risk in accordance with FISMA requirement. The framework sets forth an approach to security control selection and specification and looks into its effectiveness, efficiency and constraints. E-governance has also resulted in surge in vulnerabilities and their severity. So with e-governance, as we said, the benefits of web far outweigh the risk, but the risk is also growing as when we are using more e-governance facility, and therefore they have also identified that it has resulted in surge of vulnerabilities and their severity. Now let us get into Indian Information Technology Act of 2000 and amended in 2008. So this is the bedrock on which the e-commerce in India is taking place. But what is the challenge? So there is a lack of appropriate framework to promote electronic e-commerce and e-governance in the country. Legally, Indian law recognizes only written material and signature. Still the case. Paper record with signatures are a must. Both houses of parliament passed the Information Technology Bill in May 2000, which received precedent assent in August 2000. The IT Act was to give a boost to growth of electronic based transaction, to provide legal recognition for e-commerce and e-transactions, facilitate in e-governance, to prevent computer based crimes, and to ensure security practice and procedures in the context of widest possible use of IT work worldwide, to provide legal framework under which legal sanctity is accorded to all electronic records. The objectives of IT Act was to grant legal recognition of transaction out of the means of electronic data inter exchange, which is more web-based transaction and e-transactions, and other means of electronic carried communication, commonly referred to as electronic commerce, in place of paper-based methods of communication. To give legal recognition to digital signatures for authentication of any information or matter which requires authentication under law, and to facilitate electronic storage of data. It was also there to facilitate electronic filing of documents with government department. As you said, e-governance was a key factor. To facilitate and give legal sanction to electronic fund transfer between banks and financial institutions. To give legal recognition for keeping of books of accounts by bankers in electronic forms. To amend the Indian Penal Code, the Indian Evidence Act, the Bankers Book Evidence Act 1891 and the Reserve Bank of India Act 1934. So you can imagine that before 2000, while the world was moving in the web in a big way, Indian government or Indian companies were still not able to take the benefit, because for us everything had to be in paper and signed in paper. This act is one of the major acts through which e-com in the country and e-governance in the country prospered. So to make e-governance and e-com really India e-governance and e-com ready, following acts were also amended in line to bring them more in terms of electronic usage, which is the Indian Penal Code, Evidence Act, Reserve Bank of India Act and so on. Just to give you an overview about the IT Act 2000, it consists of 94 sections and it is segregated into 13 chapters, and some highlights are: Chapter 2 specifically stipulates that any subscriber may authenticate an electronic record by affixing his digital signature. Chapter 3 details about e-governance and provides for legal recognition of e-records, digital signature, use of electronic records and digital signatures in the government and its agencies, and retention of electronic records. Chapter 4 covers attribution, acknowledgement and dispatch of electronic records. Chapter 5 covers secure electronic records and secure digital signatures and security procedures. Chapter 6 gives a scheme for regulations of certifying authorities. Chapter 7 details about the scheme of things relating to digital signature certificates. Chapter 9 talks about penalties and adjudication for various offenses. Chapter 10 talks of establishment of the Cyber Regulations Appellate Tribunal. Chapter 11 talks about various offences, and the said offences shall be investigated only by a police officer and not below the rank of a deputy superintendent of police. The IT Act attempts to change outdated laws and provides ways to deal with cyber crimes. Hacking. Hacking has also been defined under this Act, under Section 66, along with punishment. Positive aspects from perspective of e-com is email becomes a valid and legal form of communication that can be duly produced and approved in a court of law. Companies shall be able to carry out electronic commerce using the legality provided by the Act. Digital signatures have legal validity and sanction. Corporate companies can be certifying authorities for issuing digital signature certificates. Government can issue notifications on the web. Companies can file any form, application or document to the government-owned or controlled agency electronic form. It addresses the important issues of security, electronic security primarily. Corporate can have a statutory remedy in case of breach into their computer systems or network. Issues of addressing rising form of crimes like offensive emails and multimedia messages, child pornography, cyber terrorism, publishing sexually explicit material in electronic form, leakage of data, phishing, identity theft, online fraud, etc. is covered under the Information Technology Act. The Act was amended in 2008 and it includes redefining communication device, validating electronic signatures and contracts, gaps of decreasing penalties for some cyber crimes and lacking sufficient safeguards to protect civil rights of individual, surveillance state, floppy disk, etc. And as always, towards the end of the chapter, we have some question for self-assessment. In this chapter, we try to cover the most important laws and regulations which are required in IT compliance, and one has to be compliant with these rules and regulations. We have tried to cover majority of the big rules in this particular chapter, like SOX and HIPAA and European Directive on Personal Information, Indian Act, IT Act, so that after going through this chapter, the student is fine-tuned and knows the wider implications of the data security acts that are required and the compliance requirement in IT field. And towards the end, we have this self-assessment. Some of the questions are very easy. It talks about the Act, its objective coverage, UK Act, FISMA, NIST, and GLB, how does it protect customer data, and things like that. So with this, we come to the end of this chapter. Good luck and wish you all the best. Thanks.